Welcome to season two of the Animal Highlight. This season is focused on animals and sound and has been extracted from season four of the Animal Turn podcast, which was originally aired in 2021. In this season, I'm joined with a co-host, and I'm delighted. It's Hannah Hunter, who is a friend and colleague of mine from Queen's University. Hannah is a PhD candidate in the Geography Department at Queen's University and an active member of the Sonic Arts of Place Laboratory at Queen's University, which is also a sponsor of this season. Her research explores the intersections of animals, sound, and extinction, and Hannah is particularly interested in the intersection of how we can build relationships with distant and lost beings through sound, and how sound might be a potent force for representing and challenging the fourth mass extinction. In episode two, we're focused on sonic bark beetles. Okay, and that was Jonathan. Thank you, Jonathan, so much for a fascinating episode. And now we're going to turn to this episode's animal highlights. So welcome back to the show, Hannah.
Hello, thanks for having me back.
So what are we talking about this time?
We're going to be talking about bark beetles.
Bark beetles.
Bark beetles.
But I'm guessing bark beetles are somehow related to trees, or they bark like dogs. Yeah. I don't know.
That would be a pretty cool animal highlight. There are these beetles that bark like dogs.
No. Is this an onomatopoeia? Are you really leaning into the sound theme? Like, yeah, that would be pretty cool.
Unfortunately not. They are beetles that you may find in bark.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to hand it over to you to teach us about bark beetles.
Okay, so one of the things that you and Jonathan talked about today was about insect sound recordings. So Jonathan played those amazing ant sounds. And so I would be remiss if I did not use this time to talk about David Dunn's famous recording series, The Sound of Light in Trees. So these are, anyone who knows, who is interested in animals and sound have probably heard about these. So in these recordings, he used innovative recording techniques to sonically capture the interior of a pinyon tree, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, which had been taken over by bark beetles after periods of drought in New Mexico. So we don't often think about the sounds that small insects might make, not the least what the soundscape of the inside of a tree might sound like. So indeed, in most cases, without recording devices, we would likely never know what these species or places sound like. So they're not audible to the human ear. You wouldn't be able to pick them up with a conventional microphone. So these recordings are kind of an example of how acoustic methods or sonic methods can give us access to animals' life worlds that are radically different from our own. So with these recordings, Dunn's intention was to, quote, convince the listener of the surprising complexity of sound that occurs within one species of tree as emblematic of the interior sound worlds of trees in general. It also intended to demonstrate the rich acoustical behavior of a single species of small insect and to suggest how sound is a much more important aspect of how it, the insect, organizes the world and interacts with its surrounding ecosystem than previously suspected. So these recordings were taken to trace a major outbreak of a Mexican invader species of bark beetle that can kill trees that have been made vulnerable to infestation through drought and climate shifts. So the recordings, I'll talk a bit about how the recordings were made because it's fascinating, but they were made with a custom-built vibration transducer, which was inserted between the outer bark of a tree and the interior of a tree. And so I'm no sound recording expert, but I believe that vibration transducers are pretty similar kind of bigger versions of the contact microphones that Jonathan talked about in this interview. So they pick up sound as vibrations on solid surfaces. If you tried to use a conventional microphone to record these sounds, you would likely pick up very little. The kinds of sounds that are made by bark beetles are unfortunately not barks, but are better described as chirpy, like chirps, which are made through an organ which is called a pars striden that functions as a friction-based grating surface. So that's how the noise are made. And you should definitely check the sounds out on David Dunn's website. He has a bunch of examples of it, and they're pretty crazy. So Dunn says that over the course of a tree's infestation, the interior soundscape of the tree changes. So in a sense, the recording may be very useful to measure the health of a tree. But perhaps more interesting is that Dunn has this hypothesis about whether the conditions that make a tree vulnerable to infestation in the first place, so those drought and climate conditions that I talked about earlier, whether the beetles might actually be able to hear those vulnerabilities. And that might be how they know which trees to attack and which would be available for infestation. So I'm going to quote him here to make sure I get this right. But he says that as the tree's vascular system becomes stressed from insufficient fluid transport, discontinuities in the integrity of its vascular conduits cause small partial vacuum bubbles to form. These can implode with such tremendous instantaneous force that under laboratory conditions, they have been measured to produce temperatures up to 5,000 degrees centigrade. When these cavitation events occur, they release both light and ultrasound signals. Under extreme conditions, some trees produce these events at an almost continuous ultrasound signature. End quote. So the hypothesis being that the beetles are able to hear that ultrasonic signature, which leads them towards the trees that they're able to infest. So that's, you know, pretty cool. So here, what I kind of wanted to highlight is that we have a kind of twofold and multi-species account of sonic methods. So first, we have how the beetles may use sonic methods to locate species of tree that they can invade. But the second sonic method being how human sound recordists can use innovative recording techniques to make these sounds audible to humans. Mm. So regarding the latter, I think that being able to hear these creatures might help us to evoke more empathy towards them, reminding us that despite their kind of invader and antagonistic status, they're also just beings trying to find their way.
That's so fascinating. I mean, like, I know in the previous highlight, you'd also mentioned kind of nightingales being, their sounds being like legal, mm-hmm. but because people like the sound of their songs, they're kind of let alone. Whereas here you've got an animal who we can't necessarily hear, but who's been called invasive because they're kind of infecting trees. And yeah, I like that you're kind of pointing us to some of these ideas of how animals kind of get framed in these problematic ways. But right. I have to say that when you were saying that, my mind was imploding with, as you were talking about these like mini explosions happening in mm-hmm. trees, the kind of idea that a tree is a soundscape. You know, we spoke in episode one about these soundscapes. I think that's just fascinating that these beetles are drawn to particular soundscapes potentially, and that they produce these soundscapes, right? That's mm-hmm. incredible.
And I think one of the things that I love so much about it is it reminds us that there are, you know, when we think of the soundscape, we think about the things that we can hear, and that, mm-hmm. you know, we, you know, in the same way as a landscape is the stuff that we can see. But, you know, we know that in a landscape, there's all kinds of natures that we can't see that are, you know, underground or too small for us to see or whatever. And it's kind of similar in a soundscape. There are all of these sounds that we're not able to hear, and all of these kind of sonic worlds almost that are there that we're not able to hear unless we kind of use these sonic methods in order to hear them. And
but do you, so are bark beetles considered invasive because they damage trees?
Yeah, I think they're considered a really big problem in some parts of the US. So these recordings particularly were taken in New Mexico. But yeah, because of these drought conditions that create these conditions, I don't pretend to understand it too much, but where the beetles can, and then they burrow into the tree and kill the tree. Okay. So there's kind of, if I have time, there's another sonic layer to this, which is that David Dunn, who is the guy who made these recordings originally, is now kind of using those recordings against the beetles with these kind of sonic warfare. I'm making it sound really negative, but obviously the intention is to save the trees, so it's a good thing, I guess. But these devices that act as they play the Beatles' recorded sounds kind of back to them. But in they have, what is it, kind of randomly generated electronic sounds underneath those Beatles sounds with the intention to confuse the Beatles so they are not able to communicate with each other and things like that, and so that they won't be able to take over the trees.
Yeah, this raises a whole bunch of, I think, interesting questions about ethics and the ethics of using, you know, sonic methods, some of which Jonathan and I did speak about in the episode. And I guess also how we start to frame kind of invasive species and which species we like, because there is a hierarchy happening here between the tree and the beetle, and who belongs where. So really fascinating to kind of think through. I'm maybe going to throw some other interesting facts in here about
rock beetles.
They are 3/16 inches long. That's small.
That's pretty small. So
that's tiny. They are approximately the size of a pinhead. They are oval and pearly white. I'm busy looking at actually some pictures of the tree, of the wood. And I think I've picked up pieces of wood that, I mean, I don't know enough about beetles here, but I think I've picked up pieces of wood where certainly a beetle, whether it's this beetle has done, because it's really these like intricate kind of twists and turns. It almost looks like an artwork in the bark itself. But maybe that's an engraver beetle or... you know, I need to learn more about beetles.
I know. I'm reminding us that we don't know very much about insects.
Whoa. It says there are over 2,000 species of bark beetles.
Wow.
2,000 species. And this, again, just kind of shows how we sometimes tend to have, I think, a bit of a mammal bias. Gosh, if you start to just think about how much variety there must be. But maybe I don't know. I need to talk to a few more ethologists. I don't know.
Well, and maybe sonic methods, you know, can help us to kind of make, well, I don't want to use, make the species visible through sound.
So true. Okay, well, thank you so much for teaching us a bit more about bark beetles.
Anytime.
Thank you to Animals in Philosophy, Politics, Law, and Ethics for sponsoring the Animal Tone podcast. Thank you also to the Sonic Arts Studio and the Sonic Arts Place Laboratory, who were sponsors for the fourth season of the Animal Tone podcast that was focused on animals and sound, where, of course, these animal highlights were extracted from. A big thank you also to Hannah Hunter for co-hosting this season of the Animal Highlight with me. This episode was produced by myself, edited by Christian Mentz, and the logo and episode artwork were created by Rebecca Shin. This is The Animal Highlight with me, Claudia Hurtenfelder.